inspiring, educating, and offering hope for families like yours. This is the Dr. Sonia Sutherland Show. A licensed counselor for 18 years and now a professor of counseling, Dr. Sonia wants you to know that you can be happier, your family can be stronger, your marriage can be peaceful and loving, and that safe, open, and enjoyable relationships with your sons and daughters is possible, and that you and your children can have the emotional strength you need to lead a life with few regrets. The phone lines are open. Reach out to Dr. Sonia right now, 404-355-8699, or send in your question at www.helpformyfamily.com. Now, here is Dr. Sonia.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Sonia. I'm so glad that you're joining me today. We are asking and answering questions about sexual abuse prevention. We're talking about how or perhaps where and when abuse occurs and why children don't tell parents or school teachers. So if you are listening in tonight and you know that this topic will be of interest to someone you know, someone at your school or your church or in your neighborhood or your child's athletic league, give them a quick call and let them know to tune in to 860 AM on iHeartRadio. So our guests are here to share today some thoughts on answers to questions like this and to give us some practical ideas on how to reduce the risk for abuse that we can immediately put into practice within our families. So feel free to connect with us tonight. The phone lines are open, so give us a call if you have a question at 404-355-8699. That's 404-355-8699. Or reach out if you have a question online at www.helpformyfamily.com. So joining us in the studio today is Tiffany Sawyer. She is the Director of Prevention Services at the Georgia Center for Child Advocacy. How are you today, Tiffany?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Also in the studio, we have Monique Jones and Juan Edgar. How you doing?
Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Doing great.
Good to be back. You guys on our audience, y'all recognize Juan's voice now, right? It's that beautiful, deep voice that we always have. All right, so Tiffany, you've been in the field for about 14 years, and in your 14 years of experience, you have some really specific areas of expertise that are connected with working with child advocacy. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so for the past 14 years, I have worked in the area of child sexual abuse prevention, which is relatively a newer field because it's not a topic that we talk about very often in our society. We would respond to the issue of sexual abuse when that trauma and drama occurs, but we didn't really take steps to prevent it from happening. And so for the last 14 years, I have spent my career not only educating parents in what they can do, but working with youth-serving organizations of all kinds, and working at the local level within communities to really create a culture where we are saying that sexual abuse is not something that we will tolerate here, and we're going to work and take steps to prevent it from happening.
Yeah, and it's so needed. It's so needed. You're right.
Absolutely.
We don't talk about it enough. There's almost a fear around it. If we talk about it, maybe it will happen to our children. And it's something that is so out of our control at times. And parents, when we find out about it, it's just a shocking type of thing that just sets us back on our heels to know this could potentially happen to our child. And then it did.
Maybe happen to our child. Yeah, well, there's a lot of shame and blame around sexual abuse, and unfortunately, a lot of that shame is internalized by the child, and then oftentimes the non-offending caregiver. So if it's mom who finds out about it, they really internalize a lot of that shame and how did I let this happen?
Yeah.
And so it's really important to have those conversations early on with children as they're starting to develop an understanding for their body, you know, all of that kind of information is just really key.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad we're going to be able to talk about that today.
That's great.
So you are at the Georgia Center for Child Advocacy. What's the mission of the Georgia Center for Child Advocacy?
So we champion the needs of sexually and severely physically abused children, and as well as children who have witnessed violence. So we work very closely with law enforcement and child protective services. When a child discloses their abuse the children come to our office and they have what's called a forensic interview. Those forensic interviews are all video recorded, and it is done by a licensed counselor or social worker who really understands the developmental needs of a child and can ask questions in a child-friendly way. And all of those details come out in that forensic interview. And why that's really important is because if you can imagine how much trauma a child experiences by being sexually abused, oftentimes, you know, telling and retelling that story can be equally traumatizing for them. And so when we can minimize the number of times that they have to share that story, it's beneficial for the child. It also helps if this case does go through to prosecution, so that we have all that evidence video recorded. It's not multiple people asking multiple questions in different ways. And so we get that evidence out in one time. And then that oftentimes is played in court. Mm-hmm. And even though oftentimes kids still do have to sit on the stand, it minimizes the number of questions that they're asked. Mm-hmm. Again, limiting the trauma that they experience.
And the re-traumatizing of them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I want to introduce another guest as well. Joining us on the phone tonight from Prince George's County, Maryland, is Ms. Elizabeth Faison. She's the Director of Student Services for Prince George's County Public Schools. She is a certified school counselor, a pupil personnel worker, a nationally certified counselor, and a licensed clinical professional counselor. Liz, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. In your 23 years of experience, you have some very specific areas of expertise connected with your work as a school counselor and as a director of student services. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do, where you are in Prince George's County?
So, as you mentioned, I'm the director of student services. So what's so wonderful about student services is that we house 12 different bodies of work, or 12 different departments, such as our school counseling office, our psychological services. We have health services where we employ nurses. We also, our office deals with home and hospital teaching for children who have chronic illnesses or who are pregnant and need to stay home for maternity leave, making sure they receive instruction. We also, work with college readiness and our homeless population. So my work basically is to make sure our managers are developing programs and services that meet the needs of students. Sometimes these needs pose a direct barrier to them accessing their educational program. And according to the topic that you have tonight, child sexual abuse has many, many, many implications for school success. As it relates to children who have been abused. And so our office does provide training to principals and school counselors. As a matter of fact, we're gearing up now to train over 350 assistant principals in our county. And so we recognize even the work of darkness to light in this work and how important it is for us to make sure school officials can recognize the signs of abuse, as well as utilizing parents as our partners in reaching out and educating them as well.
Yeah. And so clearly the work that you do in your county, the effort that you're leading in your county, just in terms of its relationship to family wellness and child mental health wellness, is really clear. And the strategies that you're talking about, teaching not just families but school personnel, to ameliorate the threat of sexual abuse for our children is really important. It seems like you're doing a lot of preventative work there in Prince George's County.
Well, we've learned over the years how to tweak the program to put in place solid reporting mechanisms, to provide training to our counselors, as well as to enable our reporting structures to work. And so we've learned over time what works and what doesn't work. So we have several mechanisms in place to make sure that people, number one, are aware. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, our classroom teachers are the first to have interactions with students who may have been sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And so to train them and making sure that they know the signs of abuse, and that when students disclose to them, then they know the next steps of how to report that information. In Maryland, we have a law around mandated reporting, and all, we employ currently 19,000 employees in our school system. We provide services to over 128 students at this point. Mm-hmm. And so if you can imagine employees across 209 schools,
yeah,
in our school system, and making sure that everyone has the information annually, and that they know what to do, and that we're doing what we should as it relates to the best interest of children.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think as we go, and we have learned lessons as we go.
Yeah.
So we think we're getting it right.
You have definitely set up your county to be partners for parents, it sounds like, in addressing this. You mentioned, too, that child sexual abuse has significant implications on academic performance for children. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen and what that looks like, so parents can know, you know, when they see something happening with their child's academic performance that could be connected with sexual abuse, what might that look like?
So I would just say simply, when you have a student who was high performing or high flying before, and you start to see their grades drop, those are red flags that may cause you to investigate further with the child what might be occurring. Also, if you, you know, in our school system, we have students who we serve who are homeless. And so homelessness, as we know, is one of the outgrowths sometimes for family disruption because of instances of abuse. Also, we have students who may be self-inflicting as far as being self-injurious or may self-inflict harm. We know in our society there's been a big push around substance abuse, specifically opioids.
Mm-hmm.
But we do, you know, see children who choose to self-medicate. So when parents see children who are engaging in some of these behaviors, not wanting to hang out with friends, not wanting to do the things that they did before, these are some of the indicators that they may need to have further conversations with their child around something that may have happened to them specifically.
Mm-hmm.
In this area.
Mm-hmm.
But basically just delinquency. When you see your child who was performing and behaving and has certain interests, and you see a sudden plummet and loss or change in those things, those are all red flags that parents may want to take seriously to further investigate the cause of that.
Yeah, yeah. Those are great, great pointers. And so as you, Elizabeth, and Tiffany talk with us today, we're going to be talking more about answers to questions like this: how, where, and when abuse occurs, and why children don't tell their parents or don't tell school teachers. And, you know, I felt it was really important for us to kind of focus on this today because, as we say at Legacy, the family is really the primary place of belonging for all individuals. But from a family perspective, a relationship perspective, a mental health perspective, that place of safety with the family, it can and should be the first and most healing space that exists for us. When it comes to something as traumatic as sexual abuse, it's important for us to kind of know, you know, how do we talk about that with our kids? How do we remove the fear from that topic? How do we talk about it as parents with each other? And how do we safeguard our children to be aware how not to become victims? And certainly, sometimes it's completely out of their control. But certainly the more education they have, the more education parents have, the more the taboo is taken away from talking about it, the more practical ideas we have, the better our ability to reduce the risk of abuse occurring. And so we're going to talk about things that you can put into practice immediately in your homes. So if you are listening in, and again, if you know someone that really needs to hear this, send them a text message, give them a call, and let them know to tune in to iHeart Radio Love 860. You know, as I thought a little bit about this topic, one of the things that came to mind for me was the parent that would say, well, my child has never been abused. My child is safe.
Yes.
So I don't know that I have anything to worry about, right? What's wrong with that question, Tiffany?
Well, you know, as parents, I'm a parent. I have two little girls. We want to think that this would never happen to our children. And we also like to think that our children would tell us if something like this were to occur because it's so traumatic. So, of course, they would let us know. But there's a lot of manipulation that occurs when a child is sexually abused. And oftentimes that prevents a child from coming forward and talking about it. You know, sometimes they're threatened. Sometimes they're shamed, as we talked about before. Sometimes they're really too young to even know that what's occurring to them is wrong because maybe no one's had the conversation with them before. And about 90% of the time, children are sexually abused by somebody that they know, somebody that they love, somebody that they trust, and somebody that the family and community trust. And so if we just rely on, you know, kids are safe, of course they would tell me if something like this were to occur, then we're leaving children victims to anybody who wants to come along and manipulate them. So we have to get away from that mentality of, you know, not talking to them and only talking about stranger danger because, you know, that's really not the case.
I'm glad that you said that, only talking about stranger danger. Because a lot of times we focus on just stay away from strangers and you'll be okay. That's not the case. We know that sexual abuse happens everywhere, churches, schools, recreational teams.
You know, a question that I actually have is how can we encourage those that suspect child abuse to report it? Can it be reported anonymously, or does that individual have to come forth and say that I'm the person that's reporting it? And you ask that question because a lot of people won't report in fear of repercussions, in fear of being wrong. You know, for me, I like to err on the side of caution and to better to go ahead and report and let it be proven wrong than not report. And it's
And we know as counselors, we're mandated reporters. We don't have to prove it. If we suspect it, then we report it.
So I can only speak to the mandated reporting laws in Georgia, but here in Georgia, you are, and in most states, I would say you are absolutely able to report anonymously. In some states, everyone is a mandated reporter. Here in Georgia, it's typically those people that just work with children. But I would caution our listeners, it's not just those that work with children. Those that volunteer with any kind of youth serving agency are also mandated reporters. So let's say a parent is volunteering at a school and they just want to read some books to a kid. And all of a sudden that child, you know, starts talking to them and they maybe disclose sexual abuse or they notice a black eye, something like that. That parent is also a mandated reporter. Those that work in faith-based organizations also. So, one, they need to fulfill their mandate. But two, you know, we a lot of times take the word of the adult over the child. And what that does is it leaves children without a voice. You know, we are their protector. We are the ones that should shoulder the responsibility of protecting them and not leave it on the child. And so by not taking their report and then passing it along to the professionals, then we're really giving children no voice whatsoever. And kids that try to disclose and are met with, you know, oh, that you were just misinterpreting what was going on, mm-hmm. or that couldn't really have, right. oh, no, he's your uncle. He would never do something like right. that. Mm-hmm. It really just makes them shut down.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we see a lot of repercussions, as Liz was talking about, later on as they get into adolescence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it can be very damaging.
It can be very damaging. We're going to take a quick break. Tiffany, will you hang out with us a little bit longer?
I sure will.
And Liz, will you hang out with us a little bit longer?
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. We're just going to take a quick break. And folks, as I said before, if you know someone who needs to hear this conversation, please do let them know. Give us a call. The phone lines are open at 404-355-8699. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back in just a minute.
Do you want peace in your family relationships instead of conflict? Do you want a safe, loving marriage instead of one that is failing? Are you troubled about what's happening with your children and need help for them? At Legacy Changers Counseling Centers, the goal is to strengthen individuals and families with cutting-edge emotional and mental health interventions. The exceptionally trained counselors at Legacy provide the specialized guidance you need in a safe environment of belonging so that you can make the life changes you and your loved ones need. Get real help for your emotional and relationship needs. Call today at 404-334-7575. That's 404-334-7575. You can also find us on the web at legacychangerscounseling.com. Call now and transform your life today. 404-334-7575 or legacychangerscounseling.com.
Hi, everyone. We're back. Welcome back to the Dr. Sonia Sutherland Show. We're talking today with Elizabeth Faison from Prince George's County, Maryland. She is the Director of Student Services. And we're talking today with Tiffany Sawyer, who is with us from the Georgia
Center for Child
Center
Advocacy.
For Child Advocacy.
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. So I do want to ask Liz a question. I know that you said that you in Prince George's County, you're doing a lot of education where you are, not just for school personnel, but for parents. What are the types of questions that you find parents asking when you have these trainings for them around child sexual abuse and how to prevent child sexual abuse for their children?
One of the questions that parents asked specifically was around internet safety. So we know that one of the ways that children are solicited sexually by predators is on the internet. And so I've had that question probably at every single training that I've done with parents around how much privacy should I give my child? you know, where is the line drawn when it comes to internet safety? Students don't always have to use desktops and laptops. Sometimes there are lots of apps that are available online for them to access that are very detrimental. On that note, there's a document that we created for parents to review at our training around 15 dangerous apps every parent should know about. And so when we just look to answer that one question around internet safety, we know that parents can install safety monitoring software on all of the devices that they have. We know them just really talking openly with their children about online safety and what the risks are for them. There are, you know, a number of apps that are used most frequently, like Snapchat and Blender and Kik. And the issue with some of these apps is because they allow sexting. They also allow students to be, their locations to be found. Mm-hmm. Some of them have GPS and tracking mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So it really puts our kids at risk when we look at just their availability online. And so we really had to research in order to be able to answer that question that we so prevalently ask our parents.
Yeah, that's a great point. That the level of accessibility to our children has just risen exponentially in the last couple of decades. We do have a call that's come in, so let's go ahead and take that call. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Okay, listen, I wasn't really going to call, but I just so happened to hear a news segment right before you guys came on, and it was concerning out in Gwinnett County with a second case of a teacher that had sex with a student, or some kind of sexual misconduct like with a student. So, you know, this thing of sexual abuse has many horns. Use that word very assuredly, because this is a spiritual condition of you know, someone coming to kill, steal, and destroy. And I'm saying this because it's not to predominantly say that there's a group that issue, but because all of them have it, and I'll touch on that. But the one that, as I said, it comes to mind is, I said, out here, like in Gwinnett County, where we had the Caucasian teachers second time, and then you had like the Catholic priests, over the years. And what I'm trying to do is the image, and it's becoming more prevalent. And just as a Negro, or as African American, whatever you want to call me, black, whatever, I grew up with a mom and dad, and we stayed like in.
Caller, I'm having a hard time hearing you. There seems to be some type of interference on the line, but I'll tell you what, I really appreciate what you're saying, because yes, it has become more prevalent. And as you're saying, even in the news today that you heard, the topic is right in the forefront of the news that we are listening to every day. I wanted to, Monique, I know that you had something that you were wanting to kind of focus on. You had a great question in the break. Tell us what that question was.
So I was thinking about the parents that have an issue talking about sex with their children. What I have been taught is you speak about sex right from birth with the child, and you teach them the correct anatomical parts. So this way, if they do come into a situation where someone has touched them, then there is no blurred lines of what has actually taken place. So for that parent that is fearful of having this conversation, like you said, Dr. Sutherland, the parent that says, if I mention it, then it's going to happen. How and when do parents talk to their children about sexual abuse?
So I would say, just like you said, as early as they are starting to have language and they're starting to name other body parts, ear, mouth, nose, then you start teaching them the correct terminology for all of their body parts, especially their private body parts. And these kinds of conversations can happen in the bathtub, when they are changing diapers, when they're helping them get dressed, so that it's a natural conversation. So they're just starting to use this terminology. Now, we're all scared of kids using that saying, can I say penis on the air? Saying that in the grocery store. Oh my gosh, what are we gonna do? And everyone's chuckling, right? Because you would just chuckle if a child were to say something like that. But it's, as we start to have more conversations, talking to kids and saying, these parts of your body are super, super special, and it's not okay for anybody to touch these parts of your body. And I don't just mean, this stranger over here. I mean anybody. And right. Whether it's another youth, whether it's an adult, whether it's somebody that you know, somebody that you don't know. So helping them understand that and just like we don't want anybody to touch those, we're not going to talk about these parts of bodies when we're at the grocery store, because it's private and it's something that if you have a problem, you come to me. I think the best way to have these conversations is to start with a book. There are excellent kid-focused books out there that can help parents start this conversation. One that was developed by a local author here in Atlanta is called Fred the Fox Shouts No. And kids are able to shout back, no, you're not allowed to touch me. And it's very interactive. Kids get to scream the word no. And so it's fun for kids, but it's also teaching such a great message that their body is their own. The other thing that I would say to really ease parents' mind is really what we're talking about is boundaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you bring it down to it, it's just boundaries.
Right.
And so if we eliminate the word sex out of it, although I still think eventually we do need to talk about sex and probably earlier than parents would like, if we're just talking about boundaries, that if you don't want to be touched on the side of the arm, it is
That's your right
to say no. And if you don't want to go hug your Aunt Jo because she smells bad, then that's your right to say no. So I think helping parents like get out of that discomfort around the word sex and really just talk about boundaries. And then it's a great opportunity to teach children that others have boundaries too.
Mm-hmm.
This can help with bullying. It can help with a lot of other things as they grow older. And it certainly helps to prevent child sexual abuse.
That's good. I think for that parent that is fearful, just using the word boundaries helps them. And
yes.
So I'm going to pose this question because I like being the devil's advocate. So what if you have a parent who has poor boundaries themselves and they don't understand what boundaries looks like?
Right.
How do you then approach that conversation?
Yeah. So thank you for saying that because one of the things that I really advocate for is making sure that we have education within schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to get Liz's thoughts on this, but for the youth. So not only are we training adults and those that supervise children, but we have education within schools to talk about social emotional learning and child abuse prevention. And that way, when they're receiving that information from another person and that's validated by multiple people within the school, then it helps children understand, this situation at home doesn't seem right. And maybe I can come to my teacher or my counselor or even my coach or somebody at church and talk to them about it.
Okay.
I think also parents need to have conversations with each other, about sleepovers and spend the nights and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Liz, I know you're dying to chime in here.
Yeah. Please chime in, Liz.
Yeah, you really raised a really good point because our county actually developed a task force, a student safety task force, actually, to just really look at all the ways that we could implement this educational program and not just have it be with educators and not just administrators, but extending it to parents and counselors, but making sure that children themselves had an opportunity to learn. We used to call it good touch, bad touch when I was a counselor for many, many years, but so that they would learn, you know, like has been stated before, you know, boundaries, the proper name for their body parts and how to keep their body parts safe, to just not put the responsibility on the child by training the parent, you know, and the teacher and everyone who interfaces with children, but to make sure our children have solid lessons around my personal safety. Oftentimes, though, in an educational setting, we may have children who are nonverbal. And so, I like some of the resources that the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center developed because it's for parents of children with disabilities. And so, in the educational setting, we do educate all children. And so for parents who have children who are nonverbal or who are not as verbal as other children, really being able to talk with staff and administrators about what's developmentally expected sexual behaviors, talking to the psychologist or the child's medical doctor around what can I expect my child to do, at a certain age, and also talking with administrators about what they do to create a safe environment, as well as what training will employees receive around what's developmentally appropriate for my child and to keep my child safe from abuse. Because our nonverbal children are just not able to tell you. They're on the fragile population. So being able, like we talked about earlier, just having the knowledge and the education. So it may require parents to go to the website and look up some resources around safeguarding their children who are not verbal and have special needs.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it just reinforces the understanding that community is so important. It takes community to keep children safe. Mm-hmm. Parents can't do it by themselves.
Right.
Teachers can't do it by themselves.
Right.
And it takes community being unafraid of that idea of talking about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is at the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just that discomfort of talking about anything that's related to mm-hmm. any type of sexual activity, and that's the type of education that our children need.
Absolutely.
It's the type mm-hmm. of education that parents probably didn't get themselves.
Right.
They figured things out on their own.
Mm-hmm.
The taboos were the taboos, things
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so such a normal part of human development, human sexuality,
right.
it's just not
mm-hmm.
something that's normalized in terms of the discussion
mm-hmm.
Amongst people. And so that type of education becomes really, really, really critical. Liz, when you were, I've been told I got to take a break, so I'll be right back. We're talking today with Liz Faison from Prince George's County, Maryland, and Tiffany Sawyer from right here in Atlanta. We're talking about child sexual abuse and how to keep our kids safe, how to talk about it, how to keep our kids safe, how to find resources that we need.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back in just a minute. Give us a call at 404-355-8699 and ask us a question. We'll be back in a minute.
Do you want peace in your family relationships instead of conflict? Do you want a safe, loving marriage instead of one that is failing? Are you troubled about what's happening with your children and need help for them? At Legacy Changers Counseling Centers, the goal is to strengthen individuals and families with cutting-edge emotional and mental health interventions. The exceptionally trained counselors at Legacy provide the specialized guidance you need in a safe environment of belonging so that you can make the life changes you and your loved ones need. Get real help for your emotional and relationship needs. Call today at 404-334-7575. That's 404-334-7575. You can also find us on the web at legacychangerscounseling.com. Call now and transform your life today. 404-334-7575 or legacychangerscounseling.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Sonia. Welcome back. We're talking today about child sexual abuse. If you have a question, as I said, give us a call at 404-355-8699. Liz, I wanted to just kind of ask you a little bit more about the trainings that you provide in your county, as you guys have been on the front lines and in the last year and a half and really digging in and doing some really good work in terms of prevention in your county. As you did the parent trainings, what were some of the things that surprised you most that parents did not know related to child sexual abuse and protecting their children and prevention in general?
I think just the whole thought of who a predator could be mm-hmm. or who a child abuser could be, the fact that they look like you and I, it's across every socioeconomic status. It's not germane to a gender or a race or a profession of people, that it could be literally anyone. And so when you talk like that to parents, it causes them to say, And when we looked at some of the statistics that was provided by Darkness to Light and looking at the number of children who are abused by older children was something that our family found extremely surprising. Someone mentioned stranger danger earlier, and I was a counselor back in the stranger danger age. we were taught that, and so that's what we taught. And so, just really realizing that 60% of children who are abused by people that the family trusts. And, if 90% of the children who are abused know they're abusers, then only 10%. To possibly be a stranger. And so when we talk about these statistics, as well as family members and the percentages of abuse cases that occur with family members, it really gave our parents pause for the way that they had been interacting, or they allowed their children to interact. Someone mentioned sleepovers a few minutes ago. And so if you have allowed your children to have sleepovers and you haven't had that critical conversation, we know that abuse, that 40% of the children who are abused by more powerful or older children. Mm-hmm. But when we give that information to parents, it really arms them with the information that they know to make different decisions and to have different kinds of conversations with their children and their children's caregivers. Mm-hmm. So looking at the fact that 80% of the abuse that occurs, according to Dr. Tolite, their research, occurs in one-to-one isolated situations.
Right.
And so when we talk about things like that, you could see the wheel turning for parents who fought back to all of the instances where they dropped their children off at a piano lesson mm-hmm. and drove off,
mm.
or to a babysitter and drove off. Mm. To a church event.
Mm-hmm.
And so just giving parents that information, you know, caused them to really think back on the instances where they could have put their children at risk if there was someone there waiting to offend.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, too, one of the things that it makes me think about is as our children grow up and they ask, can I go to this so-and-so's house? Can I spend the night at so-and-so's house? And they're not necessarily people that we know well, right? And then we get that pushback from our children. Well, you're too strict. Why won't you let me go? This person's in my school. Nothing's going to happen. And then we get into that tug of war, and then there's a piece of us as parents. We do feel it. We do kind of know, okay, maybe I shouldn't, but then we feel that pressure from, and what do we do? Do we succumb? Do we, you know, stick to our guns? Am I being overprotective? Mm-hmm. Am I really, you know, just kind of interfering with my child's social development mm-hmm. by doing what I'm doing? And, you know, so the encouragement I think is to parents is don't second guess yourself. When you have that gut reaction, mm-hmm. I don't know about this, I don't think so, mm-hmm. you know, there's a reason we have those parental instincts that check us mm-hmm. And press us to check our children mm-hmm. In terms of the things, the freedoms that we allow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I encourage parents, when you feel that way, don't just ignore it. Don't let it go. Mm-hmm. Talk to somebody about it, because it could be legitimate. And get to know your children's friends.
Exactly. That was something I was going to say.
Get to know your children's friends.
You definitely have to get to know your children's friends. How well you know your children's friends, is that going to keep it from happening? No.
Mm.
But if you know them, at least you have some comfort in to say that I know who my child is going to stay with.
Mm-hmm.
I know this parent. I'm not just sending my child out there blind mm-hmm. to someone that I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I would sorry, Liz, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, along with getting to know your children's friends and where they're going and where they're going to be and who they're going to be interacting with, along with that is getting to know your child.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. With your child. Making sure that you show interest in their lives every single day,
mm-hmm.
just creating those, you know, small opportunities to have conversations with them about where they were, what they did, who did they have lunch with, and so that when something occurs, our children are able to communicate with us because we have a working relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we want to create that avenue. And be that safety net and be that confidant, we have to really show interest and work on that relationship so our children can view us in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, to add to that, I would say, you know, also as parents, we need to feel comfortable asking questions about where our children are. So at youth serving organizations, it's okay to go to that camp and say, you know, when is my child is my child ever going to be in a one-on-one situation mm-hmm. with one of your counselors or one of the older campers? Mm-hmm. Do you have a code of conduct? And do you have a reporting policy? And will I be notified if something occurs? So we need to feel comfortable to ask those questions, and we're not being a nuisance. These people are mm-hmm. taking care of our children. Mm-hmm. And in the same token, even getting to know the parents that our children are with, asking the question, okay, so tonight that my child's going to be over there, who else is going to be there mm-hmm. tonight? Asking those kinds of questions, and sometimes we feel like we can't do that because we are butting in on somebody else's life. But it's our child, mm-hmm. and we have to have a certain set of standards, and everyone that's around my child has to adhere to those mm-hmm. standards, no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. That could be their grandparents, that could be aunts, uncles, cousins, mm-hmm. It could be friends' parents, it can be somebody as a caregiver in their life. And so we have to break down those barriers of feeling uncomfortable about having those conversations.
Absolutely. Right.
But
absolutely.
I would say to that, for a parent that is a little nervous about their child leaving home and staying somewhere else, what I encourage mm-hmm. parents to do is invite the child over to your home. Mm-hmm. This right. way you get to know who that child is. And children speak. They're very free with what they say. And you can learn a lot from where a child's upbringing is about and things of that nature, and just see how your child interacts with this child in your own environment.
Right.
And as you begin to feel a little bit more trust in this, then you can go, and as you were saying, Tiffany, go to the parent and say, they had a wonderful time, and grow that relationship right. with them, uh-huh. because the parent-on-parent relationship is equally as important mm-hmm. as the children's relationship. Right. You want to feel safe that your children are going somewhere that...
Right.
Their belief system is your belief system.
Right. And if you're forthcoming with, hey, Johnny's coming over to my house, and just so you know, Mom, it'll just be me at home, mm-hmm. or I'm going to let you know exactly who's going to be here, what we're going to do. So that way when you turn around and ask them the same questions, they understand where you're coming mm-hmm. from. Mm-hmm. And maybe explain why you're asking. Mm-hmm.
Those are real valid points. I did want to bring up a point that, when we send our children out to different locations, to camp, to church functions, to stay over, there is nothing wrong with doing a surprise drop-in.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with it. And we don't think about that as parents, to just drop by. If an organization says you have to call first before you can come by,
red flag.
That's a red flag. That's definitely a red flag. So surprise drop-ins anywhere your child is.
Absolutely. One of the things, too, that we think about or should think about is just parents. We're talking to parents about how to have this conversation with children. We also, though, have parents who themselves have been sexually abused
mm-hmm. right.
and have not resolve those sexual abuse issues for right. themselves. Mm-hmm. And that creates a level of vulnerability mm-hmm. for their children when parents have not mm-hmm. resolved those issues mm-hmm. as well.
Right.
And so as we observe, as parents who observe other children, look for signs in other children mm-hmm. that they may be. We're looking for our children, yes, mm-hmm. but we may see something that's happening for our child's friend,
mm-hmm. yes.
right? Mm-hmm.
right?
And we need to be looking for that, too, mm-hmm. because right. that child needs protection as well,
right.
and especially if there's not protection coming from that home, mm-hmm. potentially, it could mm-hmm. be the case, mm-hmm. then we're, as part of the community, it takes a village mm-hmm. to really raise a child and protect a child, mm-hmm. right?
right? Mm-hmm.
And so as parents armed with knowledge and education, we can protect our children and also help to protect all of the children in our community as best we can mm-hmm. as well. One of the things, too, we talking now about sexually abused children, one of the things to realize is that without intervention, without knowledge and intervention, some of those children will be the first victims for commercial sexual exploitation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And so it that ups the ante to a degree. It just raises the stakes mm-hmm. for children, not just because of sexual abuse, but now sale mm-hmm. for sex.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
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 And I think that Unfortunately, we underestimate how prevalent that is
yes.
in our country. Atlanta is a hub
yes.
for mm-hmm. commercial sexual exploitation.
Yes.
Now, Juan, I know you come from a law enforcement background.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, if you can.
Yes. Atlanta definitely is a hub for human trafficking. It has been going on for years here in Atlanta, and it's one of the worst places in itself for sexual human trafficking. I've had many cases where I've seen where it's hard to prosecute human trafficking because you have to develop that rapport with that individual. Mm-hmm. They have to come forward
right.
to report it in order for you to move forward with any prosecution. That is the most damning part of when you're trying to prosecute human trafficking is because you have to have that cooperation of that victim.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that cooperation, it continues. It's a cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's a cycle that only way for it to break is that we have to get out there in the community mm-hmm. and actually speak with people out on the street. We have to actually get down in the trenches and go out and talk with individuals and let them know that there's other avenues, that there is a way out. Don't ever feel or think that there is no way out. There is a way out.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the extreme side of it.
Yes.
But it's not something that we can ignore because
yes.
it is a very, very close gateway from sexual abuse right into
Definitely.
Being a victim, and I say that very clearly, mm-hmm. a victim of trafficking.
Yeah.
Oftentimes I think that we place a blame on children who are involved in prostitution
right.
and blame them.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
they are not to blame. They are the victims.
Exactly.
They are the victims,
right.
no matter how it plays out, no matter if they you say, well, they won't stop. It is not as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
It's not even close to as simple as that.
Right.
Right? But it starts with awareness at the very initial levels.
Mm-hmm.
What are the signs of sexual abuse of a child?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if we can intervene in those early, early, early stages, if we're looking
mm-hmm.
not just at our own children, but the children in the community, if we're watching and trying to intervene, then we can make an impact down the road in the numbers of young people who are victimized by
mm-hmm.
commercial sexual exploitation. You know, can be impacted in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and the sad thing about human trafficking is that there are many cases, documented cases, where that trafficker is also a parent,
mm.
is also
right.
an uncle,
right.
is also, you know, a cousin
mm-hmm.
who's trafficking that child,
mm-hmm.
who's taking that child out and convincing this child that it's okay for them to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real sad part about it, is that it also comes within
yeah.
the family.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're getting ready to end, and we've got just a couple of minutes. And Liz, I want to give you just a minute to kind of give us a closing thought. And Tiffany, I want to give you a minute to just give us a closing thought. I think this has been a good conversation for parents to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Parents, if you're out there and you have questions, you can certainly send in those questions even after the show is over. But Liz, can you just give us a closing thought from your perspective?
Yeah, you all mentioned human sex trafficking, and you asked earlier about one of the things that our parents were surprised to hear. So Juan mentioned about that area, but the Maryland, D.C., and Virginia area is another area. We are so close to so many highways
yes.
In this area. And so our state has developed a pilot and has written a grant to provide training to our county. Our school system has a pilot right now for human sex trafficking. We have 10 schools.
That's beautiful.
Our principals and our staff are receiving training around human sex trafficking and what it is, and how do we discern whether students have been involved in it, and looking at our truancy rates and the behaviors of children. And we work with our Mentor Freedom, who are situated in Baltimore, to provide that training. And so, you know, sometimes parents don't always realize the grooming that has occurred with their child, and the fact that maybe a boyfriend, in quotes, may be gifting, you know, showering their children with gifts and finding inroads to build trusting relationships, only to you know, have them get involved with human sex trafficking.
Yeah, so, there's so much to think about, so much to know, and so much to be aware of. That could be a whole nother show.
Yes.
Just right there.
Yeah.
It could be a whole nother show. Mm-hmm. Tiffany, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, so first I would just say, as you talked about it being a community issue, I think, one, if we can decrease the taboo and change the culture around this issue and make it okay for survivors mm-hmm. of sexual abuse to come forward, I would encourage people to go out and seek help if they need it mm-hmm. And to come forward. To educate children, we've talked about Darkness to Light. It's a phenomenal program that's out there. You can go online and take training, or at the Georgia Center, we have a statewide sexual abuse prevention initiative implementing that program. And can go to darknesstolight.org or georgiacenterforchildadvocacy.org to find more information. And I would just really encourage people to get involved, to get educated as much as possible.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. Everyone, thank you for being with us tonight on the Dr. Sonya Sutherland Show. Join me next week, Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m., right here on Love 860 AM, iHeartRadio. And if you want to learn more about the Legacy Consortium, visit me online at drsonyasutherland.com. I'd love to know what your family, mental health, or relationship topics are that you'd like us to cover here as well. So please do let us know that also. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks for listening to the Dr. Sonya Sutherland Show. If you have any questions about the broadcast, please feel free to call Dr. Sonya at 404-334-7575. That's 404-334-7575. Or go online to helpformyfamily.com. That's www.helpformyfamily.com. And be sure to join us every week at this same time for the Dr. Sonya Sutherland Show, right here on Love 860 WAEC, Atlanta's inspirational talk radio.